This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Just to see the smile upon your face. Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
And good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show right here at KWAI. Another beautiful day right here in Hawaii. Nay, you can't complain. Anyway, running a little bit of herd pace here today. I have Mr. Bruce Wilson from Talk to Action, and they're in Washington, D.C., and or on the East Coast there. And what we're going to do is be talking about Ed Silvoso and Transformation International Network, the same people that brought you Duke Iona and others of local politicians and church members. So we're going to talk about that and some interesting things similar to what transpired here in Honolulu. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Hi, Carol.
Yeah, good morning. Great. Welcome aboard.
Right.
Well, I was given a little header about Vallejo and Ed Silvoso, and maybe if you could just bring us up to snuff with this, up to pace, and let us know where we are with this and how related is it to Honolulu?
Well, it's... Oh, could you excuse me a sec? I just have to... I have somebody at the door.
Okay, no problem. Is it Ed?
Oh, okay. No, it's not. I wouldn't put it past him. Okay, so, well, what's going on is really, I wouldn't say almost identical, but for all practical purposes, it is. It's the same... it's the same entity, the International Transformation Network, trying to take over the city government of an entire city. Vallejo is about, it's around 100,000 or a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just south of, it's across the bay from San Francisco. And so it's a replay of what happened in Hawaii, the attempt to put Duke Iona and that whole slate in mm-hmm. Hawaii in the 2010 election.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got some, they're trying some new tricks, but mm-hmm. it amounts to the same thing. And so people I've been talking to in Vallejo are convinced that what's going on, Vallejo has a weak city mayor and weak city mayor system. So the idea is that people in Vallejo think that the intent is to pack the city council and then work with the existing mayor who appears to be in cahoots with Mr. Silvoso and his International Transformation
mm-hmm.
Network.
And by the way, also, we have David Crumrine joining in with us, Bruce, there.
If you want to introduce David and let him... David, I don't know if you just got here, if you heard me giving my little intro to this, but David has been deeply involved in...
Yeah. Give us a little spiel on yourself there, David, and we'll catch up here. Where you hail from and what's your involvement with this?
Well, hi. Good to be here, Carol. I originally moved to Vallejo from San Francisco in 2006 with my spouse, and we bought a house here, and quickly I learned how that this transformation ideology was becoming stronger in Vallejo through the election of the mayor, Osby Davis, and specifically when he went into his sentiments on LGBT community in an article in the New York Times when he talked about gays not being able to get into heaven. And it made me go back and look at where this ideology comes from. And I soon discovered that that this group, International Transformation Network and Ed Silvoso, had been working in Vallejo for quite a while to try and build influence, mm-hmm. and that they had been involved with things like mayor's prayer breakfasts and things like that, and quickly that they had built a group of pastors here who then began to push this ideology out through their churches and begin to gain sway over governmental entities. Mm. So that was sort of, you know, where I first heard about it, mm-hmm. and I've been continuing to do my research and following it ever since.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, this sounds familiar.
Oh, yes, it's very familiar. And I was interested to... this is obviously a more than a one-way conversation, and Carol, you have a lot to say about mm-hmm. what went on in Hawaii in 2010, because you played a significant role in exposing the connections, financial connections also, between Duke Iona and Ed Silvoso's International Transformation Network.
Right.
So could you introduce what was going on in Hawaii then to
right.
David?
Well, what I can share with you a bit, what's really unique about this effort on the part of Ed Silvoso, it tend to have no political boundaries. They cross the lines. Duke Iona, you know, was a Republican, or is Republican. And others are Republican. But we also had Democratic leaders. Mr. Norman Sakamoto, who was a senator, state senator, Democrat. Gary Okino, Democrat. And many others involved in that circle. So Silvoso, whatever the Kool-Aid is that he's selling or passing out, seems to wet the quench the thirst of many of these guys who want to mix politics with religion and know no boundaries. In fact, we found them to openly have prayer sessions in state and city offices during work hours. So they had no boundaries. And Silvoso came in and he recruited, and some of them flew down. Duke Iona actually went down to Argentina, and so did Okino. And Okino, on one reference, talks about raising the dead, witnessing these acts by Mr. Silvoso and his group. So here, the transformation here in Hawaii, Iona denied that he was any part of that, but yet he was recruiting and doing commercials and what have you. It's still active, believe it or not. And even as I speak to you now, there's an ongoing effort to hear Senate Bill 1 or regarding same-sex marriage, and the same entities that were with the Ed Silvosos are there testifying and filibustering. In a sense, there's Francis Oda, Cal Chenin's wife, and the other Harris, Pastor Harris. And real quickly, what we're seeing, and I think that the African-American ministers need to at least give consideration to this. They're being used by many of these entities, and the African American now is out. The preachers and their church members or their followers are expressing openly that this is nothing to do with civil rights and nothing to do with Dr. Martin Luther King. Well, they might be right in one sense, but because we have a constitution and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and Title VII, it becomes exactly civil rights issues. You can't discriminate. The Supreme Court has already spoken. So, but it's a very unusual, but I describe it best as being, it's manipulating, coming in, finding a few people that are willing to listen, the small preachers, recruit them, and then work your way into the entire system, and their destiny is politics. Their destiny is in the city halls and the city council, and this is what Ed Silvoso attempted to do. On this side of the ocean, Gary Okina lost. Norman Sakamoto lost. Duke Iona lost. Mufi Hanneman lost. So I think, David, you can succeed if you just go to really hammer at your politicians. Even the mayor is not insulated, and don't fear, because the average African-American does not share these thoughts that it's not civil rights. Because imagine being told that the Democrats in the South actually interfered with the Civil Rights Act, didn't want to vote on it, Eastland and those folks. So anyway, this is the guy that Ed Silvoso is looking for. He's vulnerable, people that are living in the broken down towns, and here in Honolulu, the same thing. These churches are preying on individuals. So go ahead, guys.
Yeah, well, one dimension I wanted to add to this is, well, first of all, I've been listening to conference calls organized by Ed Silvoso's ministries, and they're similar to his conferences. And of course, he's been holding his international conference in Hawaii, near Honolulu, since 2009. But in these events, conference calls and international conferences, Silvoso brings in leaders from his transformation initiative, so-called, all over the U.S., but also all over the world. And in the 2013 Hawaii International Transformation Conference, Michael Brown was one of the featured speakers. Now, Michael Brown is one of the leaders of this Transformation Vallejo initiative, along with Pastor Anthony Summers, who's running for city council in Vallejo. So Michael Brown was at this conference. He was one of the featured speakers, along with people from Hong Kong and Uganda and Newark. And Ed Silvoso has these initiatives all around the U.S. and the world. And that's one interesting feature. So people in Vallejo might be curious to know that they are one of Ed Silvoso's many experiments.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, one interesting commonality between what happened in Hawaii in 2010 and what's happening in Vallejo now is, in Hawaii in 2010 and Vallejo with Anthony Summers, you have two candidates who steadfastly denied they had any connection to Ed Silvoso's International Transformation Network.
Mm-hmm.
But in Hawaii, Carol, as we know, that broke down, and by the end of leading up to the election, I think a week before, Iona held made the probably unwise decision to hold a press conference to state that he had no connection to Ed Silvoso's International Transformation Network, when in fact we had found video of Duke Iona at one of Silvoso's conferences being anointed and blessed, and then sort of jabbing his finger and saying, "We're going to disciple Hawaii."
Mm-hmm.
And all the nations of the world. And it looked a little bit. Anyway, he was obviously involved.
And delivering the people, the language, the books, and all to Jesus, or to some say that it's not proper to say Jesus and Lord, but to some religious entity that he worships, and it's not clear who they worship, because it seems that a lot of the time they're focusing and projecting toward Silvoso. To have that kind of access, I marvel at his ability. These are supposedly intelligent people, Democratic-minded, the majority of them. But what you witness here in Honolulu, it was as though they had drank a Kool-Aid and the door opened and he had access. He was in the lieutenant governor's office being filmed there, and they're in there holding hands and laying hands on one another. So it was that kind of that just caught my attention.
Yeah, it's very much a minority movement, so it has to rely on stealth and deception to mm-hmm. achieve political power, which it does. And you know, obviously, any reasonable observer, any reasonable person in the street would have said, well, Duke Iona was lying about his connection to Ed Silvoso and his International Transformation Network, and really, Anthony Summers seems to be engaged in the same deception.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so, yes.
You know, we witnessed that Iona, for example, received monies from the gentleman at one of the carpet companies, flooring companies actually gave money, and the wife also went on the trip. We filed an ethics complaint. So, David, are you finding anything like that where businesses are actually infusing money or giving monies to these individuals?
Well, absolutely. One of the things going on in this election is that that Summers has been able to gather the support of the AFL-CIO and the Centralized Labor Council, and he's been put onto a slate of candidates where the total amount of money that's put into this slate of candidates looks like it may top over $300,000 mm-hmm. in this campaign. And if so, it's going to make it one of the most expensive campaigns in Vallejo history. So besides Michael's Transportation, who's been obviously funding this from way before I was even here and has been pushing this, other businesses like the Chamber of Commerce and other leaders as well as other union leaders have been brought into this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very interesting when you talk about these meetings within the government offices. One of the first things that I noticed was after Osby Davis had made those comments and was the LGBT community was bringing him to task for this, mm-hmm. that one of the first things that they did was they blocked a protest group from entering into the city council chambers by packing all the seats with their members so that the fire codes would not allow anyone else to come in. And they held a prayer conference in the middle of the city council, which is, you know, freely able to be seen on YouTube. Pastor Summers, part of that group, standing in front of them. And they've also boasted about bringing Ed Silvoso right into the mayor's office in Vallejo and having prayer sessions with him, as well as then on their own holding, for example, official governmental meetings like the State of the City meeting and combining that with a prayer breakfast where they are laying on hands and anointing public officials with oil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we're a little bit different in California in that the state constitution actually has provisions in it against discrimination against LGBT people. So it is exactly a civil rights act, and that's why the NAACP has bonded with our local LGBT civil rights organization mm-hmm. and the foundation for which they both oppose these kind of action.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very tricky, sticky situation, but only Silvoso, especially what caught my attention when Bruce shared this with me a couple of weeks ago, was that it focused on African Americans. And for some reason, going back to what I've said earlier, how do we, as African Americans, of all people, not because we've suffered and struggled that we should reach out and be, you know, just incorporate everybody, but we also don't have a right to stand in the way of others. Imagine a building going up and there are people in wheelchairs or handicap or physical disability. And there is the African-American church standing there saying that you don't have to build this building to accommodate the ADA individuals because it's nothing to do with Martin Luther King. I equate it to that, and it's unfortunate, but Silvoso, and my comments to if they're listening, is that you're being used and nothing more, because you're never going to rise to the top, because if it was left to your own devices, Vallejo would have prospered and wouldn't be in its predicament if you are the managers or you stood by watching it doing while you did nothing. So no benefit. I want to play this YouTube thing to let the listeners right quick. It takes, what is it, about a minute, 25 seconds, Bruce?
Well, depends which video. The one that I made, it was 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
Well, this one is the YouTube where they have the African American preachers or ministers walking at this in front of this old building and giving a sense as if it's the transformation, the marketplace
well,
is going to
sure.
Going to I'm going to see if it works. Let me know if it's not working.
stimulants are pregnant with trans.
The volume is a little low.
And John said a city where transformation has just begun. Welcome to Transformation in Vallejo.
You can hear that, guys.
Yes, there is evidence of trouble all around us, and yes, Vallejo has went through a bankruptcy. However, this is not the end of our story. Marketplace ministers and pulpit ministers have come together to bring transformation to our city. Our story.
So, guys, in that video, this YouTube video, there's Anthony Somers is actually in the video, and he's running for office?
Yeah, that's correct. As a matter of fact, I just made a video of my own today, so collecting the various connections that between Somers and Silvoso that Pastor Somers seems to be deceiving the voters about. And among other things, he's actually he appears in another Silvoso promotional video,
mm-hmm.
plugging something that Silvoso is running called the School of Tyrannus,
mm-hmm.
which is ironic given the undertones of attempted tyranny. But anyway, it's just a Silvoso educational effort, and Somers is using Silvoso's material from this to indoctrinate people in Michael Brown's transportation company. He's actually running so-called discipleship courses. But anyway, all of which indicates that Somers is in it up to his neck, and so I don't think the issue is going to go away, regardless of whether Somers wins or not in the election.
David,
excuse me,
is this, have you checked with your campaign spending folks to see if Anthony Somers participating in this? Is this, can it be considered campaigning?
Well, it hasn't been identified as being campaigning, but the other issue that's come about is that somehow Silvoso and Somers have managed to gain influence within the local Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
and one of the leaders of the Democratic Party here has become his mouthpiece and has begun pushing him from, as it turns out, we find evidence that he's been working on this for months and months,
mm-hmm.
and when I was in one of the I'm a member of this Democratic club, and when I was in there, this member was actually holding up the transformation video that you showed the trailer for,
mm-hmm.
and promoting this to the members and saying that they should actually buy this video for $30 a piece, this DVD, because his contention was that the money would go towards Anthony Somers' campaign.
Well, I would have, for me, being the devious person I am, I would have immediately ordered one and then called the Campaign Spending Commission there in California.
I did ask, actually, if he would lend me the copy of it, and he told me that he couldn't because the local leader of the Central Labor Committee
yeah.
is the one who handed it to him.
You need $30? I'll give him $30.
And you can get it for $15 straight off Ed Silvoso's website, so you can save $15 by going straight to the source.
Right. I mean, for the purpose is to get it to the Campaign Spending Commission there in California. I wouldn't want to sit and watch it. It'd probably ruin my TV. But anyway, go ahead, Bruce, if I interrupted you there.
Oh, no. So, let's see, what aspect should we bear
yeah.
into here on this? Silvoso has been trying to improve on the Hawaii model, which obviously didn't work, so He's done much more intensive outreach, as David was suggesting, to burrow into both the local Democratic Party structures and to enlist the support of unions.
Mm-hmm.
And David was explaining to me his sense that, well, unions are in Vallejo have one of the sweetest deals in all of California, so they're trying to hold on to their benefits in the face of possibly another looming city bankruptcy. So they're really casting the dice with by opting to apparently cut this backroom deal with Silvoso and Summers and mm-hmm. Transformation people. But if another bankruptcy does happen, what will happen is that they'll be forced to the table in a much weaker bargaining position. But if you look into the background ideology in Silvoso's movement, it's very strongly anti-union. So there's every reason to believe that the local unions are themselves being manipulated and ultimately will lose in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really interesting and awful situation.
Yeah.
In the way that, for one, it's one of the ways I look at it is that Silvoso has created a model by which he can drive wedges between the coalition that's been electing Democrats to mm-hmm. office for the past several years. I mean, you have the coalition has traditionally encompassed African Americans and unions, mm-hmm. and now and another emerging important part of the coalition are gay rights groups and their supporters. Well, this model that Silvoso is creating just drives a wedge between,
mm-hmm.
a wedge right down the middle of that, especially given that Anthony Summers says that he doesn't support abortion rights, which is part of the Democratic Party platform,
mm-hmm.
and if you look at his behavioral pattern, it's quite clear that he doesn't support LGBT rights
mm-hmm.
either.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, as David David, do you want to cover that aspect of it? Because it's rather blatant.
What he's overt about his dislike or disapproval of gay rights or LGBT rights.
Well, I found him when I first ran into Anthony Summers was when he was involved in this protest in the city hall and ended up making the LGBT rights protesters stand outside and not be allowed inside. But he's also worked directly to dismantle an anti-gay bullying program in the schools, because we have a situation in our city where LGBT students have been bullied by the administrators and the staff, as well as counselors and students.
Mm-hmm.
And when we tried to put up a program, we got opposition from Anthony Summers and his other pastor groups.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been vocal about not supporting same-sex marriage rights as well. Although now Anthony Summers is telling reporters that he actually voted against Proposition 8 in California, while at the same time he acknowledges that he was working within his church to hold organizational meetings for his church to oppose or to support Proposition 8 and oppose same-sex marriage. So I'm not sure what the truth is there. He said in another article that he personally opposes same-sex marriage, yet he says he voted for it surreptitiously behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
while at the same time organizing his church against same-sex marriage. So it's very confusing.
Yeah, it's a sad commentary on the part of Silvoso and others who lend themselves to this. I noticed that in researching, I don't see them in Amsterdam or Silvoso sitting up in communities such as where the majority are Anglo-Saxon. It's a situation where he is using, and basically he know that the Bible now plays a great role, but what's really sad is that churches at one time served as a refuge for the Civil Rights Act. Because if you were found
to
be...
What I have to bring up, Carol, is that you know, we've had a very strong coalition with the National Association for Advancement of Colored People, which has supported us at the state level and the local level.
Mm-hmm.
But also that a lot of the churches that are involved with Silvoso in Vallejo are Anglo-Saxon-based churches. So he does have he has a very diverse group supporting him, and it's not just African-American churches,
yeah.
Although the pastors who are leaders in this group are, like you said, small African-American-based churches who are out of a charismatic kind of...
Right. Well, I don't want to lose the punch of my statement. I understand there are Anglo-Saxons churches that are involved, but it's just clear the abuse and the disrespect and the ability of Silvoso. He is basically race baiting. He is using the African American community to do something completely, extremely opposite of what the churches did stand for. As I say again, in Mississippi, where I come from, the church was a place of refuge. You couldn't be found congregating together to discuss civil rights issues in high schools because you would get your head busted. You wouldn't get anywhere. So the churches served as a refuge, allowing people to sit and orchestrate and organize campaigns to change the discrimination policies and whatever. So it's just a strange parallel to that. Now Silvoso knows how to stroke the underbelly of the African, a select few, and I question, but a lot of them will run to the defense and claim it's not a civil right. I think we need to get past that it is a civil rights issue, lesbian, gays, and transgender community. It is that, civil rights, and it is sexual harassment, discrimination, and the Supreme Court has already spoken on same-sex marriage and what have you, right? So Silvoso is he's doing something that I think it's kind of out of bounds.
Well, you're definitely right. Not only has he been driving a wedge between the African-American community, or trying to drive a wedge between the African-American community and the LGBT community, but he's also been driving a wedge within the African-American community itself, because groups of people who did not approve of the NAACP and its support of us have broken off and created their own organizations, and those organizations are being protested by other African-Americans saying don't believe this, that this is race baiting, mm-hmm. and that they don't agree with it. So it's actually driving a wedge not only between communities but within the community itself.
Yeah, well, my message to them all is that at the end of the day, it's going to be Ed Silvoso's transformational network. They will never rise to the top. They're not his equal, not in his eyes and not in his status, in my opinion. So they're being used as pawns. And I say that based on what I know from experience, what I've observed here, how it operates. He moves in. He gets you to use your government office. He get you to commit. And then he leaves town, and I didn't know he was in Vallejo until Bruce Raisi brought it to my attention. So there's some trickery going on, and I would say, by the way, our NAACP don't get involved at all in any way. They don't speak out on the issue of lesbian, gays, and it's civil rights. They, too, hear some say that it is not civil rights. So imagine it plays right into Silvoso's hand, right?
Mm-hmm. So Carol, I want to mention, I invited Stephanie Gomes, the vice mayor of Vallejo,
mm-hmm.
to call in, and she is getting off in, she's going to be available in 15 minutes, so she may well call in. I emailed her to let her know that there's a possibility you could.
Yes, please, ask her to call, I've been reading on the Vallejo approach, the way Silvoso is handling it. Identical to Hawaii. And they're going to have their annual meeting here, correct, Bruce, or one of their big meetings, the transformation?
Oh, they'll have it. They have already held their 2013 ITN blowout. That was, mm-hmm. that was in October. So, and Michael Brown was there,
mm-hmm.
as a speaker. So, as well as Dr. Joseph Okiyo, who's the nephew of the First Lady of Uganda. And I like bringing the Uganda thing in for reasons I don't need to go into here. But anyway, so yeah, they've already held it. But they probably will hold it there in 2014 as well. I think mm-hmm. they like the climate. It's a nice mm-hmm. place to hold an international conference. And mm-hmm. so at any rate...
And a reminder, Bruce, that in 2012, Silvoso held his a North American conference in Vallejo.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So why did he pick? You look at this pattern. He picks Uganda and embraces Uganda and basically adopts him. And you have the First Lady sitting in the office laying hands on different entities and individuals like Iona and others. But why did he pick Uganda? I mean, many other countries. Why didn't he go to Sweden or Germany?
Well, that's a really complex question to address, but... Let me see if I can do that.
I'm just being the advocate here just to make trouble. But
I think that they've picked Uganda because they're this movement that Silvoso is in, it's probably no other continent on Earth is it more influential than in Africa. It's the numbers of Christians, charismatic Christians who comprise people in Silvoso's movement. They're most numerous in Africa. The movement is growing much faster in Africa than anywhere in the world, mm-hmm. and so it's an area of opportunity for them. And also, they figured out in Africa how to co-opt streams of U.S. government funding and channel those to their own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's a convergence with U.S. geopolitical interest, which is too complex for me to get into. But it just so happened that Uganda was a great spot because it's been heavily targeted by American revivalists since the 1950s. So there was a big support base for what Silvoso is trying to do. And so it was just a convergence of factors. It was somewhat accidental, but at any rate, they have a fantastic amount of interest, influence in Uganda. And it was just odd to me when I first discovered Silvoso's operation. I found on his website video from a 2008 conference he had held. He was holding his international conference at that time in Argentina, and when I saw the people attending, they were coming from all over the world, from Hong Kong and Uganda and the Philippines, and it was like a mini United Nations. I'd never seen anything like it, and it fascinated me, which is what drew me into studying what Silvoso mm-hmm. was up to. But mm-hmm. I think that people in Vallejo would be utterly shocked to understand that this is going on, that here's an evangelist who's got his hooks into government at the highest levels in cities and towns and even entire countries around the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, once again, people, to potential listeners in Vallejo, you are at Silvoso's experiment.
Right.
Really.
Well, this is the Carol Cox Show at KWAI 1080 AM, and my guest is Mr. Bruce Wilson and David what is it? Let's see here, I've lost you. Crumrein. And we're talking about the Transformation International Network, Ed Silvoso, and his activities there in Vallejo, California. Let's take a call. Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I was just checking up on that, you know, the last situation you guys were talking about, that Kiki old small boy album on Kauai. What's the last, the latest?
Yeah, we're on a different subject right now. We can.
Oh, what subject you guys on?
We're on the Vallejo, California. Try call back next hour about 9:30, 10:30.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Alrighty. Go ahead, guys. Either one of you.
So what do you have to say, David? I'm gesturing around for other dimensions to go on about. But
David, are you there?
I am. It's very disconcerting to be watching this happen and to know that the amount of effort that's being put into this by outside entities into electing this candidate, it tells me that there is that there's something to be that it's of value to them, that it's a valuable commodity for them to have this person in our city council. And I've seen, you know, what they've been trying to do within countries, within states, and within other cities, and it makes me really fear for democracy. And, you know, when we're talking about unions, for example, we have to specifically say that, you know, this is strictly about public service unions. And I don't believe that the common worker who is a member of a union knows what's being done with their money behind the scenes. And I know for a fact that the members of these Democratic councils who've not been paying attention and allowed this to creep in didn't know what was happening. And so, you know, light is a really powerful disinfectant. And I think that once people really see what's been going on here, that, you know, that they will also be able to smell the stench.
Mm-hmm. But I'm at a loss, and Bruce, let's kick this around a little bit. What is Ed Silvoso really accomplishing? Is it to he espouse his ideas and he's recruiting for whom, or is it just he's just committed to recruiting religious-minded people and spreading the word, or is it some bigger picture that he's trying to get? Is he trying to conquer the world, or is he what is he attempting?
He actually says in his book Transformation, it's a 2007 book, he says now we are going for entire nations, in fact for all the nations of the world, and he really means it. He's creating models by which a small determined minority of people in this movement can create coalitions, shifting coalitions with various interests. I mean, usually there's big money in the mix, yes. And in this case, in Vallejo, there are unions which want to protect their member benefits. But anyway, he constructs these models by which he can subvert local government and both tear it down, but also channel its resources towards his people. And that seems to be going on in Vallejo very much. I was interested to hear that Michael Brown is working with a local county sheriff on a early release program, which releases people into Michael Brown's clutches, and then he trains them and so on. And, you know, it's rife, a situation that is ripe for abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Silvoso is both organizing to harness governments, but also you can imagine what will happen in Vallejo if there's a second bankruptcy.
Right.
I mean, really, it's somewhat reminiscent of what Detroit is going through.
Right. Well,
and yeah,
one of the things that we know that there's the churches say they advocate, and which is fair, separation of church and state. The average Joe preaches that, and the average Joe believes in that if he believes in the Constitution, right? So why would a Silvoso or the likes of Silvoso and Summers and Michael Brown and all of those guys wed with Silvoso in government, knowing that it's a very fine line, and at any time you're susceptible or vulnerable to being prosecuted or being charged, because there's this thin line that why play on that line? You might cross it sometimes. So there must be something bigger. Because generally, most people want to get away from government, especially when it comes to churches. But why is it that Silvoso is... That's what strikes me as strange.
Ultimately, he and people in this movement... Silvoso is part of a movement, Charismatic Christianity, whose leaders say quite directly that they want government based on biblical law as they interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, Silvoso's very close movement colleague, C. Peter Wagner, says that he wants that people in his movement who had achieved dominion over everything. He actually wrote an article about that in 2012 in Charisma magazine. It was titled, it had a title of something like, Why We Must Take Dominion Over Everything. It was that literal. But so the idea is to organize this determined minority of charismatic Christians to take dominion over the so-called seven mountains, seven key sectors of society, which are, let's see if I can do it, business, government, media, arts and education, the family, religion, and I'm probably leaving one out. But anyway, you get the picture. So,
Well, you know, Bruce, one of the things that was interesting to me was I got a quote from you on your research where Silvoso is talking about this canopy of prayer in California, which is where the audio of Summers participating in this canopy of prayer meetings comes from. And in that quote, Silvoso says that there's 35,000 precincts, political precincts, in California, and his intention is to take over every one of those precincts. And he says, you know, it's not enough for us to give a fish to person. It's not enough to teach them to fish. We need to teach them how to buy the pond, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to own the pond.
Yeah, well, that's a great point, David. If you look at, really, from one perspective, Silvoso is just really reinventing political organizing.
Yeah.
And one of the ways he does this, he's got a website called transformourworld.org, and you can go to this website and there's an interface where you can zoom in on your own town and sign up for patrolling the streets of your town. You can sign up to patrol a specific street. And so people sign up to do this, and they pledge to walk the streets regularly. And in the background, there's this ideology that, well, there are demon powers that hold sway over cities and towns and regions, even streets or houses. And so you have to identify the demons, but of course some of the demons are human beings, and
so
the ideology comes in. But what he's really doing is teaching people to become involved in their local neighborhoods in a way that it's not obvious, but the underlying ideology is very aggressive. But they're essentially going through the motions. They're becoming precinct captains almost.
Right. We're going to have to take a break in about we got at least one more minute. David, if you want to real quickly, and then we'll take a break. If you want to hold on or call back, and we can give hopefully Gomez can call in as well. So we'll take it about another 30 minutes in the next hour. But in a minute, go ahead, David, real quick. We got about one more minute. You there, David?
It's very disconcerting to be, you know, involved in this. But in the same way, you know, I think that people are beginning to see how this is much more than just somebody's, you know, religious perspective.
Right.
Now, because what people want to say is, well, everyone's entitled to their religious beliefs, and I certainly agree with that. But it infringes on people's civil rights when it infringes on people's political rights, and it's basically corrupting systems within political systems and infringing on people's rights. That's when it really it bothers me.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're going to take this break. We'll be right back. This is the Carol Cox Show with about 5 or 7 minutes, Bruce. If you want to hold on, you guys, if you want like to hold on.
Sure.
Aloha.
Sure, I'll hold on.
second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101.
Please.
Yo, man.
Yo.
Open up, man.
What do you want, man?
My girl just caught me.
You made her catch you?
I don't know how I let this happen.
With who?
The girl next door, you know? I don't know what to do.
So it wasn't you.
All right. Honey came in and she got me red-handed, creeping with the girl next door. Picture this, we were both butt naked, banging on the bathroom floor. How could I forget that I had given her an extra piece? All this time she was standing there, she never took her eyes off me.
Oh, you're a good woman, I'm just so your villa. Let's not turn your weakness all in a clean of your pillar. You better watch your back before she turn into a killer. Let's review the situation that she called a winner. If we are to a player, you can know how to play. This day or night,
time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
All righty, good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. I have my guests, David Cronmeyer and Bruce Wilson. Bruce Wilson has the TalkToAction.com, or TalkToAction has been, he's been with us several times in the past, and we're here discussing the Ed Silvoso Transformation International Network, or what have you, and the activities in Vallejo and other places. Guys, welcome back.
Hi, Carol.
All righty. David, you there?
Thanks. I am.
All righty. Anyway, let's take off where we left. But with this Anthony Summers, has he held office before?
No, he's basically a pastor. He says that he's been a pastor for 25 years, and mm-hmm. for 4 years he's been a pastor in Vallejo. But he's also what they call a marketplace minister as well, and he works with Michael Brown, who is a leader in Ed Silvoso's Transformation Network.
How long have they been involved, Bruce, or do you have anybody documented their actual involvement with Silvoso? Is it a recent occurrence?
I think David probably knows that history better than I do, but it certainly goes back a few years.
Mm-hmm.
At least to 2006.
Okay. But no political office or anything?
No.
So
you know, that there was another candidate who was part of this effort 2 years ago.
Okay.
And he was unsuccessful. He didn't have the support of Democrats behind him. And he didn't have the support of these labor councils. He was not as smooth a talker. He was from another country. He was Nigerian. He was a minister and had a very thick accent and was not a good communicator and didn't have that backing and was ultimately unsuccessful in becoming a city councilman. Mm-hmm. Ozzie Davis, on the other hand, has been, has successfully run twice for mayor in Vallejo.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think, Bruce, David, that this action or effort on Silvoso and the timing with the LGBT, the rhetoric and the what's going on, do you think they're using that to make headway?
I think they definitely have. They've exploited this conflict within the African-American community where, frankly, is a minority of African Americans in Vallejo who are not on board with what the NAACP and other groups have done in support of same-sex marriage and LGBT rights. And they've exploited that conflict and been able to guide a small portion of that very fundamental group over mm-hmm. to their side on this candidate.
Is this apostolic, or what this population of African American churches?
Many of them are Church of God in Christ, but they're apostolic and charismatic, and they are a variety of different denominations,
mm-hmm.
but they are certainly fundamentalist and charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'd add that I would venture to guess that many of the members of these churches backing the so-called Transformation Vallejo Initiative, many of the individual members of these churches really don't know what the ideology at the top of it that is behind it, Silvoso,
mm-hmm.
and probably Anthony Summers, he is all about. In other words, there are real theological issues, and I think that a lot of average churchgoers who have been caught up in this would actually be aghast to learn about the theology behind it, which is, in many ways, both extremely predatory and aggressive and supremacist, and also rather exotic. There's a very intense demonology that goes along with it,
mm-hmm.
and the notion that the demons are everywhere, you know, demons must be exorcised from human beings and society and just geographic areas. And anyway, in theological terms, it's not normative within Christianity. It's the theology that, and the movement that Silvoso was a part of and has helped create. It's essentially a created religion.
Mm-hmm.
By some argument, it's not even necessarily Christianity anymore, or it bears the same sort of relationship
mm-hmm.
to Christianity that Christianity does to Mormonism.
Right.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because if you talk to some of the followers of these pastors, they'll claim that their pastors have no such kind of ideology. But the reality is that even they might not know because, for example, from what I'm hearing, Pastor Anthony Summers doesn't preach Silvoso in his sermons, but what he does do is hold these teaching seminars and organizing outside of his normal church service as well. And so for the casual visitor to his church, they may see nothing amiss about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to the point where you're talking very theologically about what his ideas are, you may come up with a very different idea based upon what his actions are. And you know, it's very interesting that when we've brought these kind of issues up in front of Pastor Summers, that he's chosen to hide and say, for example, there's a letter right now on the website for the Central Labor Committee that says, where he's quoted as saying, my relationship with Ed Silvoso is extremely remote, and that he doesn't believe that Ed Silvoso has these kind of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, you know, it can be shown that he's, you know, as Bruce said, up to his neck. He's in it up to his neck.
Well, is it possible you can get some of the union leaders and some others, and we have another show, and have them to share with us what do they see other than union purpose or employment purpose? What other do they share the religious bit about that? But with Summers, has he been out preaching? He's a marketplace preacher. Does he go around to other churches and preach this, or is it just he's campaigning?
Yeah.
What?
So that's been part of his campaign strategy in this campaign, is that he is a sort of a different kind of animal because he's a marketplace minister as well as a pulpit minister.
Mm-hmm.
He has his own church, which is very small, but it's still a church. And what he's been doing is using his relationship as a minister to go around and visit all of the other African American churches in town as part of his campaign trail.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ministers related to me that, you know, during the middle of the sermon, he merely recognized Pastor Summers as being part of the congregation that day, and Pastor Summers decided that it was his opportunity to get up and make a campaign speech in the middle of services.
Mm-hmm.
Which if his African American minister did not find very comforting. He didn't like that at all. So you know, he's definitely targeting churches as the means for him to get elected.
Yeah. Well, you know, guys, actually, in the African-American community, I'm having hail from there and being African-American. In the recent past, a couple of years back, there was a Network International and ran by Abraham Kennard, who was taking millions from African-American churches or anybody that he could. And I think he's still in prison. But through this effort, just to give you a little idea of what can happen and what's the potential, and I say that, offer this to alert the African-American community that a snake in the grass is a snake in the grass. I don't know what face you'll put on it, but in this situation, some of you may, if you ever listen to this show, you might know about this situation. He operated from out of Mississippi. And he would offer a program claiming grants from the government. And similar to this of this gentleman, Anthony Summers and others, that he would go out and have his lieutenants to recruit and make promises. If you gave $3,000, for every $3,000 you gave, you would get $500,000 back. Well, anyway, he went to prison, and he had his tentacles all the way here in California. The reason I offer that is that when you approach the local pastors here, they were completely combative, even though that they were serving as lieutenants, because they would get a percentage of the loot. So this is the caliber of people that you're dealing with. And then others within the church felt, well, why don't we, if we can give $3,000, get $500,000, why don't we all get together, as we call it here, a group or a hui in Hawaiian, is to get together and we'll give him $50,000 and we'll get millions. Well, they got nothing and they didn't want to admit to their church. And a lot of churches, it would even take their titles. So I would be interested in knowing in this process, has Silvosa put his hands on any property or through this process? And how about a 990, Bruce? Have you pulled or requested 990s on Silvoso's program?
I've got 990s for Silvoso's Harvest Evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a time lag, but you can't really tell that much information from them.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't looked at his most recent ones that would have,
mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure they're out yet, that would have his Vallejo activities. I'm going to do that. But part of the problem with this is that a lot of this, it's very easy to hide financial activity behind church structures, and that's
mm-hmm.
just the legality of it given current IRS rules. So a lot of it's opaque. But,
yeah, but it's very hidden, Bruce, but from anecdotally, for example, this Democratic leader here, from emails that you shared with me, he tells that Silvoso owns property in the area here, and that Summers and Silvoso have a very close personal relationship. He says that they have a personal relationship, yet Summers says to the public that they have a very remote relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously has people doing his hiding for him and not being forthcoming about what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Carol, one of the points that you're making in terms of the underlying economics and scams, essentially, I was really struck in learning about Vallejo to see, Ed Silvoso, even when he was rebutting what I was writing about him in Hawaii, and because I had tied him to this so-called kill the gays bill in Uganda, Ed Silvoso's rebuttal was, oh, no, we're not involved in that. What we're really about is economic development. So when I looked into Vallejo and I found one of Silvoso's main people in the Vallejo Initiative, Michael Brown, who runs a transportation and bus company, essentially, he Silvoso is touting what Michael Brown has done as a great new innovation, and what Brown has done is an employee structured ownership plan, an ESOP. And this is the way this is described at Silvoso's conferences is essentially, and it's this bad. They say, well, basically what this does is it takes one bag of gold and makes them into two bags of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what really happens is the employees invest in this. They buy the company from the owner, and it's financed through the future profits of the company. So basically, maybe it works, or maybe it crashes, and the employees lose their pension plans.
Are you saying Michael Brown is an actual employee for the government or running a bus system? What? Clarify that.
He runs a private bus company.
Private bus company, okay.
But what I'm saying is that he has created this extremely shady way of extracting, having his employees buy his company from him. So Brown gets all the money. He's still running it.
Mm-hmm.
And the employees essentially are betting that the company will make good. If it doesn't, they potentially lose their retirement funds, as far as I can tell. So it's, I wouldn't say it's fraud, but it's an extremely shaky wager, I would say.
Right.
And this is Silvoso's great plan.
It seems to me to be very close to, you know, the old sharecropping model or, you know, indentured servitude. It's not far from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what El Silvoso acts like. He goes back to the plantation. It appears that seem to be the people that I've seen that gravitate around him and deal with him. They have a plantation mentality, you know, that they got to get in with the government, get a good job, and then on weekends become good Christians, and then collect themselves together at some grand gathering, an annual or transformational. And that seems to be the order of the day for many of the people here. And I mean, I used to live in California, so I know Vallejo, and but to present them as the problem solvers, you know, the rack buildings and what have you, when it goes deeper than that. But I had a question. Did Summers or Brown or the other gentleman in that video, did they actively, and Silvoso, did he participate in, was he anti-Proposition 8, California Proposition 8, or does either of you know?
Anthony Summers has stated in, you know, in newspaper articles that he himself organized his church to support Proposition 8, which opposed same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, when he was questioned about it by an LGBT newspaper, he claims that secretly he voted against Proposition 8. And there's, of course, no way to know. But what he really did was he spoke out very vocally in support of Proposition 8 and convinced his church and the other churches he organized with to become part of that.
Ah, okay.
He also has said in other articles that he said currently that he personally does not support same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We lost him there, Bruce. But anyway, go ahead, Bruce. And you know, Bruce, I would love to try and reach out and get some of the others. I guess Ms. Gomes couldn't call.
Yeah. The timing was tight, and she's. I'm sure she has a lot on her plate right now. I may be speaking to her later on this afternoon. So. But yeah, it's quite a situation, Vallejo. And I honestly, Carol, honestly, I could not imagine that there would be a rerun of what happened in Hawaii. That I would be dealing with 3 years down the road from when we were talking about a lot on your show back in 2010.
Yeah,
it boggles my mind.
It's like that little game you play at the circus. You hit it over here and it pops up over there, you know, whatever, that mallet game.
It's like whack-a-mole, or you could use a toothpaste tube analogy.
Yeah. But the only guy that coming out smiling seems to be Silvoso. But there, I mean, when you follow his doings, and he seems to gravitate to a certain ilk of people, and then he people of color. He seems to be more in this situation. Go to why not Detroit?
Oh, I mean, well, his movement actually is very active in Detroit too.
Okay,
I don't think they've managed to get a lock on the mayor's office in the same way they would like to, and they boasted about having influence there, but they don't have an Osby Davis figure that they control in the same way. But to address your, I guess, some implicit point or question, what's really going on with this is it's an incredibly, from one level, in terms of it functions for one thing as an incredibly sophisticated strategy for Republicans to deal with the demographic problem that basically, you know, the white majority of America is almost over. And people have seen this coming for a long time. Well, in Texas, Sovoso's colleagues, such as Alex Patterson, Sovoso is an apostle too, they were working with Governor Rick Perry, and they had a dog and pony show where they would go around with someone named David Barton to tell African Americans that, well, actually, the Democrats are the real racists. The Republican Party, that was the party of Lincoln, and, you know, it's utterly ahistoric, but it ignores the history of the Democratic Party since, you know, the late 1960s when and Lyndon Johnson's decision to sign the Civil Rights Act and so on. You know, it ignores a lot of recent history, but anyway, what Sovoso is doing is can function as a Republican strategy to attempt to get over the demographic problem.
Right. Well,
obviously, it's, yeah.
Let me make sure that the listeners out there who have stumbled across this or were intentionally listen, that this is about what I've come to recognize. This is about a group of people that say that they were going to destroy all idols, burn all books and of certain types, and deliver us or all of us to Jesus. You can speak to that in a greater depth, but that's what this is about. It's the little lump in the carpet with the African American community speaking out against LGBT and saying it's not civil rights. We can get over that. But the long-term effect is that what troubles me, and everyone is entitled to their religious rights and approaches and belief, but when you're going to take upon yourself to deliver me, strip me of all those rights that I enjoy as an individual, and then thrust me into the pulpit or wherever you go so that I have to abide by your religious ilk, that bothers me. And you can speak to that.
Yeah, it's really about a movement that has no respect for people who hold religious and philosophical beliefs, other than its own. In other words, it's a movement that wants to, as you mentioned, burn books and scripture and destroy art objects and cultural objects associated with every religious and philosophical belief system in the world,
right?
But those of itself.
Yeah, I want.
I mean, that's in Sovoso has written about that, and his colleagues do. So that when I came across that, and in their books, that really summed things up for me. These people made it look utterly different from the Taliban, and they behave very differently too. But the underlying sort of ethic of religious and ideological supremacy, it's the same.
Well, I must tell you, when I saw that video on YouTube with Sommers and Michael Brown and the other gentleman, I thought, oh my God, this is a repeat of the old days where if the people like Ed Silvoso would come to the community during the election time, they wouldn't give a rat's butt about that community when it wasn't election time. But when election time, they would come with money in hand and find a few key people. And the African Americans out there that hail from the South, well, they'll know what I'm talking about. And you identify just a few, quote, leaders or men that or women that have some charisma within the community, and you grease their hands. And they tend, as a tendency, because of the economics and the hardships, and not all African Americans, some will just hit you in the face and run you out of the community, but there are some that are charismatic, will receive these handouts and proceed to carry your message, or Silvoso's message, back to the community, infecting it, and rewarding them. And in the old days, it was, as insulting as it sounds, we would always get fans, you know, the cardboard, popsicle stick cardboard fans, would vote for whomever. That's when we would see the politicians. So I see this, and I see Summers, and I see the other guys, and it reminds me, and it stirs some old, ugly reminders that, and I think Silvoso, that's why I openly said what I said. I believe that he is, it's race baiting. He's using African Americans in this instance to do just that, to get his foothold in. And because who's going to stop him? The average person won't talk about race. You know, they, because it's taboo, and then most of them African Americans, we've been impacted by injustices of civil rights and violations. So some of us pretend that we have a patent on discrimination and argue that the gay community has no civil rights and whatever. So it's all nonsense. But I hope the listeners out there, if you come across this show, take it to heart and understand where we're coming from. There's a great danger in what Ed Silvoso is trying to perpetrate on you. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, Carol, one image that really struck me from footage of Silvoso's conferences, there was one in 2008 I found it. Imagine this. Silvoso is up on the stage with a Ugandan man who's an evangelist, and he's a very tall man. He's dignified. He's extremely well educated. He went to he may have gone to Oxford. He went to elite British schools, and so Silvoso is standing up on the stage with a man. His name is Joseph Okia. He puts his arm around Okia. Then he reaches up with the same arm and he pats him on the head. You know, as an African American man, you know that there's a lot packed into that.
Well, yeah, so I want everyone listening too that I'm not joining forces with you, because you're not an Ed Silvoso. I'm an individual, independent thinker, and if you haven't drawn the conclusion by now, I believe that based on what I've seen with the Silvoso movement here and what went on and how he co-opted our government structure and had influence on several people, major people. He didn't do it by accident. He did it by purpose. And I can only say, be careful, Vallejo. You might get what you pray for. So, you know, that's basically what I have to say about that. But I would love to carry on this conversation in the near future. If we can get the mayor back, I would love to hear her comments, and maybe we can send a letter to Mr. Summers.
Oh, sure. I'm sure that Stephanie Gumbs would have a lot to say.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can. Hold on one second. I'm going to entertain one call, and then I want to move on to another subject, but we got about another 10 minutes. Give me one second.
Okay.
Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
I want to comment on a question of what happened in the situation on the island of Kauai in a small boat harbor.
Yeah.
What's the status on that?
We're still looking at it. We've sent it to the state and still looking to see what.
Okay. I just heard that from a friend that, you know, I told you about the trailer that got damaged.
Right.
They refused to pay for it. They just got a letter today and saying that he got to do the whole 9 yards.
Let me give you a call back later, and then we'll talk about it. And maybe next week we'll pick it up. We'll see what the state.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Anyway, that's some Carol from last week. Anyway, go ahead real quick, and then we'll if you got anything you want to finish up with.
Oh, well, first of all, thank you very much for having me and David Crumride on. It's a shame that Vice Mayor Stephanie Gomes couldn't make it, but maybe in a show in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're going to be dealing with Ed Silvoso quite clearly in the future. He won't stop, and as a matter of fact, as far as I can tell, well, let me put it this way. Me and colleagues of mine who track Silvoso and people in their movement, their so-called transformation initiatives are springing up so fast across the United States, we can't track them all.
Mm-hmm.
This is the wave of the future. Ed Silvoso is pioneering these models, and, you know, it's different in every city. It's different in Newark. Newark is different from, the model is a little bit different from Vallejo, and those models are a little bit different from what went on in Hawaii, and it's still going on, mm-hmm. because, of course, they'll be back. But every time, really what happened, after the Hawaii debacle in the 2010 election, they learned from that, and so they changed their model, and that's what we see in Vallejo.
Mm-hmm.
So they realized, well, we have to infiltrate the local Democratic Party structures to really get in there. We can't just buy or co-opt or acquire individual politicians such as, you know, Senator Norman Sakamoto or
right.
Gary Aquino. We have to actually get control of local Democratic Party structures, and then we'll have that credential, that authority.
Right.
And we also have to get unions.
Right.
And so they've done that. And, well, he won't stop. I mean, Vallejo, obviously they've been working on it for a couple of years, but I can guarantee they're working on models in other cities that aren't on my radar screen right now. And as a matter of fact, one of Silvoso's colleagues is working on a much bigger plan in Baltimore, Maryland, where I used to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that they're in Baltimore, they're scaling up Vallejo times 4 or 5. Right. Baltimore is about 500,000 or so.
Well, let's see if we can. I would love to again join forces with you on this and bring some light, and we can post it up. In fact, this show will be posted up in the next 30 minutes after we go off at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. David, real quick, any comments? Closing?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I guess we lost him, but apparently.
Yeah.
And anyway, I would really appreciate him calling, but go ahead, Bruce, about another minute or so, and then I'm going to shut this one down. But let's see if we can orchestrate a show, put together some others, and reach out. When is that election at Vallejo?
It's on November 5th, so it's going to be, I believe, Tuesday, and we'll know very soon.
Okay.
So, and, you know, maybe if I can get Vice Mayor Stephanie Gomes and then my colleague Rachel Tabachnik, who I work with very closely in terms of studying and tracking Mr. Silvoso and his transformation movement. I'd love to do another show on this, and I can also look into more specifically what's going on in Hawaii now, because as we know, Silvoso's movement doesn't stop. It just learns and
right.
improves the model.
Yeah. Well, they're all right now preoccupied with dipping in other folks' business down at the state house and the state senate. The religious arm of life is down objecting to. But again, it's a very dangerous process that we find ourselves, you know. They wouldn't want to live under my conditions of what I believe in, right? So,
sure.
But so why should we have to live under their beliefs? But I just think that unless it goes, if it goes unchecked, then it becomes a bigger problem. So thank you for your time and reaching
you.
Out. And we'll link to talktoaction.org. Talktoaction.org. And you can reach us at carol@carolcox.com. And, Bruce, thank you. Any closing
Thanks,
words?
Carol.
Okay. Well, we're going to move on. I have one little subject I wanted to talk about. I promised last week I'd talk about it. So thank you. Aloha.
Okay. Aloha.
Okay. That was Mr. Bruce William and Wilson. I'm sorry. Talk to Action. May not seem important to some of you out there, and it's, someone said it's anti-religion. No, you have to sometimes express your concerns openly, and that's what we are attempting. And I believe every man, woman, and child should be able to believe anything they want to, pray to anything, and do all of that. But I also believe that no man, woman, or child, or any entity should, once they get off their knees, then come to me and dictate to me what I should do because of what they believe in. It's not healthy. So I talked to you last week about border water supply, and we'll be talking much more about this. I have filed a letter with Mr. Ernest Lau, the director, managing director of the Border Water Supply, and in that letter I'm asking him to take actions and request a criminal investigation. You see, I'm privy to information that tend to explain why downstream people are having $5,000 water bills. And let me go back upstream, so to speak, and you see, there is a gentleman, and these are, I'm going to be citing from documentation, and you draw your conclusions, and this is why I'm asking Ernest Lau to halt the contractual services of these entities that I'm going to name. And then you can at least be informed and understand later, because they've been giving us a ride with this candy-coated, well, it's the batteries, and the batteries are broken, and it's the workforce, and we need more people, and we're overwhelmed with the phone calls and the complaints. And we've laid all of that out to you, like you, looking for answers. But there's something much, much bigger that has occurred within the border water supply that has gone unchecked. And so there is this gentleman by the name of Brian McKee. Mr. McKee came over with a company, his wife was the agent for a company called EMA, E-M-A. Inc. And they have contracts with the city and county of Honolulu. And follow this now. This contract was about approximately $798,000 to handle the systems that were installed. And they were going to fix the solution. And that was a couple of years back. That contract is still open and alive, being served. It has blossomed in change orders to $3.5 million and still growing. Yet, we see an increase of problems with the water bills and what have you. So, back in 2005, this gentleman's wife, Julie Wright McKee, this is Brian McKee's wife. Now, we're told and hadn't confirmed this, that he came and also was a consultant for this company through the Board of Water Supply. That we haven't confirmed. So, but we do know he became a permanent employee of the Board of Water Supply. And whatever amount he was making, $100,000, $120,000, I don't know the dollar amount, but he worked for a long period of time, and he left on May 20th, 2011. That is the information we have. But in the process, he participated in making RFPs and developing proposals and all of that for those systems that we see now, the CMMS and what have you, that monitors and manages the bills and the water systems and all. He got out, and now remember, May 20th, somewhere around there, 2011, he left the agency. But then the following year, he was awarded a contract for $1.5 million. Now, meantime, he was the IT head and was responsible for acquiring some or all of the systems that we know now. And Mr. McKee, the information that was provided to us that he planned and developed the RFPs and evaluated proposals and then negotiated the contract for the BWS, Maximo CMMS system, Ciclo, and JD Edwards, which we know as the one of the problem situations. This gentleman is now... So when you work for the city or in the government, conflicts of interest of concern. So you want to, you have to leave that agency for a year. Now, in my letter to Lau, and I invited him to come on today, but I said that it was too short of a notice, but they didn't tell me what's a short or long notice, so we'll go at it our own. But Lau signed off on this. Ernest Lau, for some reason, now you tell me if you have a comment or insight on this, because I'm just suspicious by nature at this point. So if he left, if McKee left the agency in 2011, May 20th, they posted the, they opened the bid on May 22nd, 2012. That would make it 1 year and 1 day, basically, that he met the legal requirement. How did he, who is it that elicited that bid and waited that long? If it was so important and we had broken meters and what have you, poor readings, why did they wait a year to advertise this bid or put out this bid? And then... it was given to, the situation is that he then brings in, or I'll say bring in, a company called Step Consulting, who is subcontracting of sort and working with the city or Board of Water Supply. Brian McKee at that time was the agent for this company. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yo, what's up, Carol Cox? How you doing, Carol Cox?
Anyway, this the Step Consulting, Inc., is from Washington, U.S. State, USA. And Brian McKee is a registered agent. So we're asking these questions. How is it that a person working for the city, and we're concerned, and I am concerned, and I've written this letter asking, I want to see the records to see if Brian McKee had access to the office when after he left the agency. And I want to know who is it that would wait 1 day after Mr. McKee became legal to compete for the bid. And then I want to know, why is it that Ernest Lau did not take a concern or become concerned with the fact that this man has this now contract who just worked for the agency, and with all the problems we've been having, why would you give it to a person that was handling it and it went to pot under his watch? Why would you give him a contract to fix it? Something's wrong here. The problem isn't about batteries. They gave $2 million plus to Paul's Electric to fix the batteries. They gave another $2 million to Pack Electric to fix the batteries. That didn't fix the problem. We're still having problems. So I personally believe, based on the information that I'm receiving from employees and some upper staff members and the management who've been feeding me information, it's nothing to do with what has been presented in various news articles, or it's nothing to the system. Price Waterhouse, someone, an employee of the Board of Water Supply, supplied me with a copy of a Price Waterhouse 2010 study that talked about the faulty aspects of these systems that the city has acquired and relying on. It was right there at their fingertips. So what is happening? Back to McKee. Now, I don't have all the proof and all the documentation, and I've asked for it, and we'll see if they drag their feet if the Corp Counsel becomes their legal blockade. But here's what I do know. The McKee, in this proposal that he proposed when he wrote this, his company is called UTC 10 Consulting. Now, remember, he left in May 20th, 2011. And if this bid, we don't know when he put his bid in, but we know that if he put it in after May 20th, 11, or and wrote up the proposals for bids, then there's really something wrong. But his company, he mentioned his company in the bid where he prepared the bid, was UTC 10 Consulting. But it was only registered January 14th, 2012. Somewhere in his qualifications assessments of other competitors, or someone, Ernest Lau or someone, said that these entities that competed with UCT 10 were qualified, but they would be relying on basically subcontractors. But then this is exactly what McKee is doing. Now, I don't know, I can't tell you he did anything illegal, but I can tell you this. Someone in the Board of Water Supply knowingly facilitated Mr. McKee and Mr. Ernest Lau, based on what I see and what I know. Ernest Lau should resign. Because if he took over, there's one little other key. Ernest Lau was working in Kauai, the county of Kauai, water supply department, Department of Water Supply. And this company, Step Consulting, who Brian McKee is an agent for, who basically is subcontracting, or whatever the relationship, it's not clear, worked at Kauai as well. So Ernest Lau had an obligation, or has an obligation, if he knows that Brian McKee is running the agency, IT, and the chief officer in communications, and he basically, what he did was, he planned, I'm going to say planned, designed, developed, RFP, evaluated proposals, and negotiated the contract for these systems. And he was a chief information officer in charge, and the IT systems implemented between August 2003 and May 2011. So why would he step out of role as an employee and then Ernest Lau allow him to compete? Or anyone allow him to compete? Where was the Corp Counsel in this? So here's what I think. I believe that there is a web that has been woven up top with consulting companies. And I believe someone in Board of Water Supply is on the take. I'm just going to tell you what I believe. I can't speak for the consultants yet. I'm still digging and scratching. But to watch an individual work as a government employee or a Board of Water Supply, semi-autonomous, whatever we want to call them, leave that position interested in knowing that they have contributed to the need and the write-up and the design and the proposal for bidding, and then put his name in the hat and compete for that contract. Someone in Board of Water Supply should have said, time out. It just doesn't smell right, doesn't look right, and all of these things are broken under your watch. So why on earth would we even entertain you or anyone remotely related to you who's been there on scene? It's broken. You haven't fixed it. We don't want a contract with you. But no, someone in Board of Water Supply advertised the position. The announced and listed the contract for bids on May 22nd, 2012. About 1 day, 2 days at least, I'll give him 2 days, when it became legal that he could step back in and, quote, comply with the ethics rules. So how is it that we could still have change orders? And by the way, in this proposal, McKee is going to be involved in a greater role now in reviewing consultants, their proposals, and all of that. So basically, he has placed himself directly in line of fire to receive an interview and process Board of Water Supply's situation. I believe what has happened, there's a culture that has developed up top. They have found a way to take money from the ratepayers through consulting fees. If they were to just take that money and put it in the infrastructure, I'm here to say to you, based on what I've seen and the number of change orders and the amount of money and the tolerance for or the invitation to abuse, 85% of the problems that they're experiencing would be completed. There was a company called Tetra Tech who competed for the bid. They didn't get it. Local company, another company, they didn't get it. Brian McKee's company got it, and only his company is there's only two people that list on the DCCA as managers. And this is standard language now, but I'm really concerned that with the types of he and his wife, Julie Wright McKee, are the sole members, managed by members. It says here, member managed, and the names and addresses of the initial members. I won't give their personal address. It's public record. This is what's really strange, and it's an LLC, by the way, and we can't change the definitions and the things that are about an LLC, but just to show you how much thought went into this process, and someone internally should be held accountable. There should be a freeze on all activities involving any contracts with these entities. EMA, Step Consulting, CDM Smith, and UTC 10. That's my view, but I assure you, if we were to take back control, if we were to say to Ernest Lau, you got to go, and say to UTC 10, all of you, we must do a review, a justification as to how and why you got the job and how and why, who were the actual people to consider that if it was the board, then the board seemed to be having a problem. Because if you know that Brian McKee was the head, was at the helm and these things went wrong, and they've been going bad, real bad, and then you give him a contract, must have water on the brain. Have to be. Or no ethics. When there's a senior citizen who complains that they had a $5,000 bill, or anybody, even myself, I was being calculated or computer estimated. My meter is broken. But they're not fixing it because the money is going into consulting fees. This is absolutely, it's shameful. There is no explanation for it other than it needs to have a, just for groceries, they're getting paid. Step Consulting gets to submit for groceries, by the way. Groceries now. Meals and groceries. Apartment rentals. Internet supplies, monthly fee, rate fees, and taxes, and transportation, and airfare. And you, the ratepayer, barely hanging on, is having to dig and scratch and look into your pocket and struggle because Ernest Lau, the board, and others are either too unethical or they should have said, no, we have to stop it. You're not getting a contract. We're not granting you the contract. You work for the agency. No, it's done. Get out of here. But nope, the ratepayers will just suck their blood. We'll create billings. We'll start charging for billings. They had no problem getting that in efficiently, did they? But guess what? They have no shame. And I've asked him, you can get that letter at carol@carolcox.com and see the letter we've written and asking for a criminal investigation. And I've approached the city council, and hopefully they will do something, and we'll go from there. But I'll see you next week, and thank you for listening. carol@carolcox.com. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox.